What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Bullying, often dismissed as a normal part of growing up, is a form of aggressive behavior ranging from elementary to middle and high school and adulthood. Many people do not realize the magnitude of bullying today. Bullying involves the tormenting of others through verbal harassment, physical assault, or other subtle methods of coercion, such as manipulation. Wherever human beings interact, school, workplace, home, and neighborhood, bullying can occur, and the effects of bullying can be serious and damaging. Dr. Joe Taravella, licensed clinical psychologist, joins 411 Teen. He's in NYNY, the Big Apple. Welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
There seems to be a common thread between violent attacks and bullying. I mean, for example, I think about the two shootings charged with Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold. I mean, they were outcasts at Columbine High School. They went on a shooting rampage and killed 13 and left dozens injured before turning the guns on themselves. And we continue to see more incidents of school violence. Then we had Charles Williams, 15. He decided to get back at his tormentor at Santana High School in Santee, California. He fatally shot two people. And I could go on and on and on. Dr. Taravella, just what is happening? Why is bullying such a problem?
You know, I completely agree with you. We could go on and on about this. I mean, bullying is such a major problem today. You know, we see more and more of our kids, tweens, and teens that are so vulnerable to it, even when they're at home, because there's a new and more devastating form of bullying as well, known as cyberbullying. Mm-hmm. So while we see a lot of physical bullying going on, what's taking over is cyberbullying as well. And it's become a big problem in this country and around the world. And we really need to start learning more about it and understanding the many things that can be done to try and prevent it and for all of us to be proactive with it.
Well, let's look at that specifically. Why is it on such an increase? I mean, why are we seeing it at this level? I mean, is it simply that we are now in tune and so we are watching more so? Or has it actually increased over the years?
Well, I think we're definitely more in tune. And given cyberspace and that information can be mm-hmm. spread immediately all around the world, we have this information available to us 24/7. So it's not like years ago or decades ago when we would get the news from our television sets. We are getting it, you know, live streamed on our mobile phones and on our computers. So there is much, much more awareness about it, and information is just spreading much more quickly.
Well, what's the impetus? Because it still says something about that individual who is engaging in the behavior, whether it's cyberbullying or physical or emotional. I mean, what are they getting out of that? I mean, in that you know you are tormenting someone else. You know that you are harming, you are hurting, you know, the victim. What does that say? Are we breeding more of this type of individual today? These individuals who seem to lack empathy and to seem to enjoy inflicting pain? I mean, just what's going on?
You know, this may seem controversial, but everyone's the bully and the mm-hmm. victim in this situation. You know, the bully is someone who is hurting a lot inside mm-hmm. and is not really being recognized or taken seriously or getting the help that they need, and they are a victim as well. They are just externalizing on a very grand scale.
So how do we address this? I mean, what do we do? I mean, as far as, let's look at parents. What should they do? They feel that their child is bullying. Are there signs? Are there signals that may indicate that their child is being bullied or is bullying?
You know, I first want to say that I think many, many people today are struggling to do it all and to try and have it all. You know, to have that family and have that career and try to be successful on all fronts. And it's become very, very challenging, you know, more recently for families to try and do that. And I think across the board, everyone feels that they wish they had 5 or 10 more hours per day to get everything done the way they would like it to. So one is everybody's busier, which leads to more stress and anxiety, and things start to fall through the cracks. So what can be done is paying attention to our children, looking for changes in their behavior. You know your children better than anyone. Look to see what's going on with your child. What may be some of the signs and symptoms that you see that's different in your child? You know, are they suddenly getting depressed or stop using their phone or video games? Do they seem more stressful or anxious? Are they withdrawing from family, from their peers? Do they not want to go to school anymore? You know, are they avoiding conversations? Are their grades plummeting? Do you see any kind of changes maybe in their sleep and eating patterns or differences in their mood? You know, there's so many things to look for. And just because your kid has one or two of these things doesn't mean there's a significant problem. But it means to be aware, to be present and be involved and say, hey, something's going on with my kid. This generally isn't how they behave. And what's going on here? What I tell all parents is to try and create a safe spot in your home, a place where children can come and speak to you, because you really want to facilitate communication between children and parents. And, you know, we no one's really taught how to communicate effectively. And that can certainly be a first step in being proactive so that your children will come to you. And in that safe spot, it could be, say, a safe room, a sofa, a bed, or it can change. Maybe they're in the tub and they say, hey, Dad, you know, there's something I want to talk to you. Could this be the safe spot right now? So we want to facilitate communication. And for the parents' role, they're not going to overreact. They're going to listen attentively, give them their full attention. They're going to repeat what their child is saying to them, because children want to be heard and they want to be understood. The answer may still be no, but at least they know that their parent listened, their parent heard them, they got them, and then they could explain their reasoning behind yes or no, whatever it may be. So by creating a safe spot in the home, we want to get a very warm, welcoming, neutral environment to facilitate communication. And that truly is one of the first steps. And it's very easy to do, you know, in everyone's home, where parents aren't going to overreact. They're going to listen to their kids. And the children are not going to get in trouble for something they've done. You know, it might be a great opportunity for them to come and say, hey, I did something wrong. I want to talk to you about it. Rather than hiding it and creating more distance between the child and the parent.
So what I hear you saying, though, is that really the atmosphere has to be created by the parent. I mean, first of all, the parent has to at least be in tune with their child and have developed or foster an open kind of communication. Because if you have a parent who is somewhat, if you're in a dysfunctional family and communication is a problem, then right. you're not going to be in tune with what's going on. Or communication might be great, but if you aren't around to communicate. So often today we have parents who have so many demands on them, and the children may indeed be, you know, these latchkey raising themselves, you know. I mean, the parent is there to drop them off to school, and then they get home the best way they can, and, you know, they pop whatever in the oven, and then when the parent gets in, they're tired. You know yes. the kind of picture I'm painting.
I do, and it happens a lot. You mm-hmm. know, a lot of people are struggling. One of the ways that we can use technology to our benefit is when a parent is working late and perhaps the kid is home, maybe they can FaceTime or talk to each
Great.
Other, even though a parent might still be in
yeah.
the office and might still be late.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way to kind of keep that connection, even though you're not both in the house together.
Exactly. And that's what I wanted to hear you say, given an example, so those who
yeah.
are listening can really benefit from what they think. Well, I am. I'm just being pulled in all directions. There's only so much I can do. But you can pick up that phone.
That's right.
You know, or you
pick up that phone,
you
or you can
Skype or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You know, there is the technology, and that's how it can work for us and to help us as well. There are a few nights a week where I work late, and I do that with my own kids, because I want to stay connected and I want to stay in touch as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. One of the characteristics that you mentioned was depression. And at what point, I'd like to ask you to share some symptoms of depression, and at what point does depression become a problem? Because with adolescents, you know, they're depressed, they're volatile one day, and the next day they're depressed, and another day they're independent, and another day they're very dependent. So
yes.
for those parents who, you know, are going, where do I go? I mean, can you give them some ideas as far as what to look for in depression and when depression would become a problem?
Yes, I mean, I believe it starts to become a problem when you see it becomes chronic over a certain period of time,
mm-hmm.
especially with our teenagers. There are enormous amount of developmental changes that are going on with them physically, emotionally. There are going to be mood swings. I tell parents, don't take it personally. It's not about you. It is an appropriate developmental stage that they go through along with all the changes that are happening to their bodies. Let's take a moment and sit and remember when you were that age and some of the things that happened with you at school and at home and how you were feeling and how you handled it. So I kind of bring the parent back into that time of the age of their child and see if they could get a better understanding and some empathy for how their kid is feeling and dealing with it. Everyone's going to get sad, have a bad day,
mm-hmm.
Anxious, get some bad grades, get into an argument with a peer, a misunderstanding with someone. That is part of life. And when we facilitate communication at home and there's a safe spot there, kids are more apt to talk to their parents about these things without the fear of being judged
mm-hmm.
and yelled at. So that's a great start.
Okay, I always say it's the degree, you know. I mean, we all may experience, you know, the mood swings. We may experience the depression. We may experience the elation. But, you know, how much of it? When it goes to the extreme,
yes.
then that is when we really need to maybe possibly address the
yes.
issue.
What I would do is when you're seeing these changes in your children, talk to them about it,
mm-hmm.
and also speak to the teacher. You know, you're working as part of a team. There are adults in place to facilitate the development and growth of this child, this valuable human being. And everybody's working as part of a team. So I would speak to the teachers or the administrative staff at school to see if they're noticing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then What should we do about it, if anything? Is there a school counselor that we should talk to? Is there a specific situation that happened? Are there any kind of groups at school that would help them out socially? And that's definitely a first step there.
Mm-hmm.
If things become very severe, and then I would speak to the pediatrician as well and talk about other avenues that you can go down. You know, there is medication. I always say to parents, medication is valuable. I'd like to use it as a last resort and get as much information as and help as we can to our children. But when it's needed, it can definitely bridge the gap. You know, what I say sometimes, medication is the Band-Aid that you put on the boo-boo,
mm-hmm.
and it will cover it up, but it doesn't heal it from deep within, you know, and that may come from more talk therapy, more social skills groups at school, and other avenues as well. So it shouldn't be the first or only recourse, but definitely can be very beneficial as well.
How do you feel about family therapy? Because sometimes parents aren't aware of the buttons that they may push or the behaviors that they may exhibit that may in turn feed into the depression and the possible bullying or whatever that may come from that.
Yes, I'm a huge mm-hmm. proponent of family and marital therapy, which I have a specialization in. So I know it works and I know it benefits. You know, each family has their own special and unique dynamics, and some may be working and some may not. And so we want to have a better understanding of the role that we play. You know, parents are their children's first role models, and a lot of what kids pick up on is their parents' style, and even some of the words that they use.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not always aware and in tune of exactly how we sound or sometimes what exactly we're saying or how it's interpreted by our child. And all of that can be revealed in family therapy. And everybody gets a place at the table. Everybody gets to own a piece of something that they do positively, negatively, that they would like to change, and a lot of growth and change certainly can come from that.
Okay. Hold your thoughts for a second. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, weekly program that deals with issues and events that teens and their parents and other interested folks have to deal with. Joining me, I welcome Dr. Joe Taravella. He's a licensed clinical psychologist out of New York, and he's talking with us about bullying. Dr. Taravella, earlier you talked about and mentioned communication, and I wanted you to elaborate a little bit more on communication, because I think it is really the root of many problems, many dysfunctions that we find in families and particularly with teens. I mean, how often have you heard that my parents don't listen to me, my parents don't understand? And just like to have you talk about communication a little bit, how important and significant it is, and just what it involves. Because communication is not only verbally sharing and non-verbally sharing, but it's listening too.
Yes, it is. And like we said before, you know, we're all so busy and in a mm-hmm. rush. Sometimes we don't often take the time that's needed to listen. You know, none of us were taught how to communicate, and I think one of the greatest things that I took out of graduate school is courses that delved into family relations and communication skills, how to responsively assert yourself in a mature way,
mm-hmm.
and to listen and to hear. And these tools are so invaluable. What I have all parents do is tell them, listen to your child and repeat what they're saying to you. And sometimes
indeed.
If your child is 2 or 3 years old, you might want to get down on the floor with them and say, so, Johnny, what you're saying is you want another cookie. And sometimes the kids will mm-hmm. just stop, like in amazement, and look at the parent, like, wow, you heard me. You know, and then he might get it, he might not. But we're role modeling for the child new and effective ways on how to communicate. And that child will take that to school and start applying that new technique with their peers and with their teachers by even saying to the teacher, so you want me to da-da-da-da-da with the teacher? And they'd be like, yes, that's wonderful. And there's so many little tips and tools that can be taught in therapy and in family therapy. I tell everyone, use I statements. I'm upset over the fact that you didn't take out the garbage, rather than, I see you didn't take out the garbage today.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When we say you, we're pointing the finger towards that person. And when we do that, we set up an atmosphere that becomes defensive and cold and hostile. So it's no longer warm and welcoming.
And it makes them reluctant to...
Yes, reluctant. They want to dig in
mm-hmm.
their heels.
Mm-hmm.
Good, and I'm not doing it again.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's a breakdown in communication, and they're like, fine, and do it and go up to their room, rather than having a conversation without pointing fingers.
For our listening audience, are there any resources that you might refer them to that you think would be real beneficial? And just... dealing with their teens overall and bullying specifically, communicating, anything that you would like to refer the listening
yes,
audience
I think
to?
There's a lot of good information
mm-hmm.
on the internet,
okay.
you know, in terms
yes.
of tools about bullying or tools for cyberbullying or effective ways to communicate. And you can find a lot of articles that are written out there that will help educate you. You know, and that's one of the
mm-hmm.
things that parents need is to, you know, a lot of times they don't have all the answers and they don't know a lot of information, especially when it comes to cyber issues. They are not as familiar with all the different types of social media outlets that are out there as their children are. And so it takes time to learn and educate yourself on this and be able to have a conversation with your children about it so that you can also teach your children what is appropriate online behavior, what's not appropriate online behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if your children see that you're, you know, yelling and screaming and hitting at home, you know, they're going to take that out with them.
Exactly.
And use it. And, you know, what I say to parents where there's two parents in a home, be a tag team. When you
mm-hmm.
see your spouse and partner is just at their limit, just give them a tap and say, you know what, honey, go inside. I'll take over now. You
mm-hmm.
know, and the other person has to let the control go and know that their teammate is going to take over for them, you know. And so a situation won't escalate as it would if it's just one parent handling the situation. So use that teammate of a partner of yours and get some help because you want to work together as a team. And it's important to show your children that as well. There's a lot of valuable lessons for them to learn from parents. And, you know, we're not perfect. We're
mm-hmm.
parents. And if you're just trying to do the best that you can and, you know, get some help along the way, bridging the gap, at home, in school, with the teachers and the administration. You know, there's a lot of information and resources to use both in the school and online as well.
In addition to the cyberbullying, I know I've had several requests to talk about just old-fashioned aggressive bullying that's common in the elementary school, middle, and senior high. I know that there's studies that suggest around 20% of all American children have been victims of bullying at some point. And the same number have described themselves as engaging in some form of bullying behavior, you know. And bullying behavior can range from teasing to stealing lunch money or a group of students physically abusing a classmate. All of this we're seeing at increased rates. How do you distinguish, or do you distinguish, between normal teasing and bullying? That's one of the questions that I had received.
I think normal teasing comes and goes, and it moves on and kind of, you know, dissipates over time. I think what we're seeing is the bullying is just persistent and prevalent. So someone becomes a target, and they remain that target with assaults, harassing, threatening, humiliating, you know, and it's pretty constant, whereas someone may just get teased here or get teased there, and it kind of goes away. You know, bullying, it stays a problem, and that's why I tell parents it's important to take care of the situation right away. And so that's why we want to facilitate an open, warm, safe spot in the home where kids will come to you with these issues. Because once it starts to roll along, you know, it builds some momentum. Other kids may jump on the bandwagon as well, and the situation starts to blow up. And then it takes a while for, you know, an intervention by parents and teachers and administration to, you know, alleviate the bullying. So handle it right away. If your child is being bothered by the kid next to her in school, bring them to the safe spot at home so you could find out about it. Mm-hmm. Get them to talk to you about it. And once they know that you're not going to overreact, they're not going to get in trouble, you're not going to yell at them, they're going to come to you with these things. I have a lot of patients of mine that will talk to me about these issues, and I will certainly bring the parents in, and we'll all discuss it together, because my office is always a safe spot. And anything they say is appropriate. They can never get in trouble for anything that they say. And what I tell the parents is, let's see what your child would like to do. Would you like to say something to the person in school? Would you like to talk to the teacher? Would you like your parent to speak to the teacher? Let's work as a team to see what we can do about this. And so the child doesn't feel that they are all alone, and they have support, and that something will get done right away. So taking that first step and having your children come to you and trying to fix the problem right away is very important. And that's why we kind of want to be proactive in getting parents and children communicating as effectively as possible.
As we talk about the evolution of bullying, does the bully set out, or does he or she intend to bully, or do you think it evolves? It may start out as an accident and it just evolves.
I think there are cases where it starts out as an accident, and I think there are cases where it just kind of evolves. A lot of times the bullies are victims. They might not be victims at school. They may be victims at home or in other areas of their life, and they are taking that aggression and negative self-esteem and trying to get control of their life and imposing that into other areas and situations of their life, like at school or with other peers and classmates at school. So I always see the bully as a victim that is not getting the help and the attention, the positive attention that they need. And it's
And is possibly modeling what's going on at home.
Yes, at times. Yes.
Yeah. Not all the time, but you may see that. Somebody may be bullied in their home. Okay?
Yes.
And So you may see them modeling that behavior because so often,
exactly.
Yeah, so often children, really, they just are modeling what they've seen. They're just emulating what's going on in their environment.
Right. And I don't think that you and I are just talking about parents.
Mm-mm.
We may be talking about other caregivers or babysitters.
Right.
Or older siblings.
Exactly.
You know, so it's not all on the parents' shoulders and what they're doing wrong.
Mm-mm.
You know?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's their milieu, the milieu yes. that they're in. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And, you know, what we are seeing is more and more and more incidences of cyberbullying are going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's becoming quite prevalent. And parents are... trying to educate themselves in this area, but
it's hard.
It's hard, and it's constantly evolving and changing as well. You know, first there was Facebook, now mm-hmm. Twitter and Instagram and Pinterest, and it just goes on and on and on. So there's all these new things coming out, you know, and there's Minecraft as well. So something can be written and sent out to hundreds and thousands of people all
yeah.
at once,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's the new era that we're in, and it's.
And once it's out there, it's always out there.
It's always out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
yes. The good thing about it is there's records of it that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of, you know, teaching your children what to do, or trying to ignoring those messages or blocking senders or saving the evidence or taking time away from the computer. You know, there's a lot of things that can be done because there is proof and there is a record of that online.
As I think about bullying, I know I'm kind of focusing on the younger children because I wanted to get your opinion on just the role that the media, and I don't mean social media, I mean, you know, television, video, what role they play in contributing to bullying. You know, one of the most violent hours of the week or mornings of the week is that Saturday morning cartoons that still, you know, are prevalent during that time. And if you look at cartoons, of course, you can look at them 24/7, but, they, you know, if you look at them, you'll find that, you know, the film heroes often beat each other up and kill each other, and the weak and the sick are despised. And do we find, or aren't we simply finding children imitating these values?
Yes, and we are. We're setting them up. And
mm-hmm.
it's very unfortunate that it is such a violent hour on the weekend morning.
Yes.
You know, We're setting up these kids to see this and be aware of it. And what are they going to do? They're going to mimic it. They're going to play it out. You know, kids will then jump on their coffee table. Hopefully they're not glass and
mm-hmm.
jump onto the couch or onto their siblings that are onto the couch and start rolling around. And, you know, this is where
exactly.
they get this from. So.
Well, you may remember we had an incident here in Florida, several years back, where a young boy was imitating what he saw on television and ended up killing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's so incredibly sad. We want our parents to know what our children are watching, who they're communicating with mm-hmm. online, and be able to monitor this as effectively as possible. You know, sitting down and looking at some of these cartoons and then saying, you know what, this really isn't appropriate for you. Let's find something else to watch and look for some more wholesome programming. There are lots of shows that are wonderful alternatives for these kids that don't have violence in them. And it just takes a little bit of time and research to find that out. But it's definitely more beneficial for the children not to see this type of behavior, especially the little ones.
Yes, and the parents also need to be aware of what their children's friends' homes, what are the standards there? Because I think of a young a student that I had who was saying, well, you know, even if my parents don't let me, I just go over Omar's house. And at Omar's house, his mom lets us look at everything. And he was going over there every day after school. So he still was getting it. And and the mother was just not aware that that was what was going on, even if she controlled it in her house. So if you encourage them to be in an environment that doesn't have the same standards that you have, then you create a problem.
Yes, I know. And, you know, you want to foster good peer relations with your children.
Mm-hmm.
You want them to have friends and make friends. But, again, you know, you need to be on top of this. Talk to the parents. Find out who's going to be in the home. Do they have any guns in the home? Are they safe
and
secured? You know, and these are things that parents might not even think of, you know, because we think, well, if we have a safe home environment here, I'm sure it's fine there. And it's not always the case.
That's a very important point, because I've seen that happen in so many situations where they aren't aware of what's going on in the home, or they aren't in touch with the peers. And I always tell parents, well, I can almost tell you what's happening by looking at the peers that your children have.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You know, kids, they pick up a lot from their friends, just like they pick up a lot from home, and they pick up a lot from school. And you want to try and identify where this is coming from. You know, the teacher's got what's going on in the classroom. You want to know what's going on with the parents in your child's friend's home. So it's keeping yourself aware of all of that and staying on top of it.
Right. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a conversational forum for teens and other interested folks. This hour, we're examining bullying. What's going on at that time? How can we help them? Joining me is Dr. Joe Taravello from Manhattan, New York, and I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield. We're going to take a break, but we'll return momentarily. Dr. Taravello, let's look at the bully a little bit more in this last section of the programming, because bullies are everywhere and they're at all levels. What is going on, and you've definitely addressed this somewhat, but what is going on with the bully himself or herself? What can we do to help them?
I think it takes a village of adults to look and see what's going on with a child.
Okay.
Is this kid happy? Are there problems? Are there problems at home? Are there problems learning at school? Are there problems with other kids that they're having? Are there significant changes that you're seeing in this kid? Bring it to the attention of the parents, the principal, the teacher. Again, take that village, take that team, and start a conversation about this child. They deserve every chance in the world to live a happy, fulfilling life. And we want to be aware and mindful and diligent of anything that we see and start there with the conversation. Bring it to these children. Try and find out what's going on with them and where we could make the changes in their life so they don't feel that they are a victim or that they all need to act out as a bully any longer.
Because it's important that the listening audience hear that the bully is a victim and the bully is also hurting. And so often I don't think that individuals, parents, adults, whomever, appreciate that.
Yes, yes.
That's why I wanted us to look at the bully, because, you know, so often you raise your ire, you become angry with, oh, he's just a horrible boy. But maybe it's a little bit more than that, okay?
That's
it goes
right.
deeper than that.
That's right. Never a horrible boy, mm-hmm. but maybe just behaved or acted in a horrible way. And we need to make that distinction right there. You know, we don't characterize a child mm-hmm. entirely by their actions. They are always a good boy or a good girl. They may just have behaved badly. Now, it seems very controversial to say yeah. a bully is a victim, but they are hurting someone.
Mm-hmm.
They just happen to be the kid that acted out and hurt someone else. And if it's your child, it certainly doesn't feel good to hear me say, well, the bully is also a victim, but that is actually what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody needs to pay attention to that victim. And when
exactly.
we do, we will see dramatic changes going on, and your child is no longer going to be bullied by that kid.
What responsibility does the school have? And
that's
I say that
one.
Because, you know, I've seen a number of different responses to this from school administrator and teachers. So from your perspective, what responsibility does the school have?
I think they have a large responsibility because children spend the majority of their day at school. And yes, it's an environment to learn and to grow and develop. But when there are problems there all day long, they need to be addressed. Teachers and administration want the support of the parents to help their children learn and grow, and the parents also need the help and the support of the teachers and the administration when there are problems going on with their children, whether they're the victim or the bully. They need to work as part of a comprehensive team. And when that happens, we truly can make some miracles here. We want to look at the school climate and how they look at aggression and bullying and cyberbullying. You know, what kind of anti-bullying rights does the school have? Are they educating the children and talking to them about bullying, what bullying means? What kind of acts are seen as bullying? They might not even know that yelling at someone or pushing someone is bullying. It
mm-hmm.
just might be what they see on TV or what they've seen at home or what their older sibling may do and don't think it's really that big of a deal. But what happens is it is a big deal, and it escalates from that point in time and escalates and escalates.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to educate the children, and I think it's the school's responsibility to take the time to educate their children and to have some kind of anti-bullying laws and Bill of Rights, even that children may read and understand and have them sign and
mm-hmm.
hang them up in the classroom so that you could always go back to it and say, see what we all agreed upon, you know, and use that for them.
Do bullies...
As children get older,
mm-hmm.
they could even start anti-bullying clubs and making posters around the school and doing things like that so they all feel like they're working together to create a safer environment for all kids.
Mm-hmm. Do bullies continue into adulthood? You know, I think of this because there was an interesting statistic that I read. 60% of the people who were considered bullies in grades 6 through 9 were convicted of at least one crime by the time they had turned 24.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. Have we heard of domestic violence?
Mm-hmm. Have we?
Yes. Those, unfortunately, are the bullies who continue to hurt throughout their adolescence and into adulthood and continue those maladaptive behaviors of hurting others because they're hurting so much inside.
Okay.
There are lots of long-term issues, you know, with bullies. Again, we see a lot of depression with suicidal tendencies, becoming dependent on drugs and alcohol, mm-hmm. difficulty maintaining relationships, higher chances of abusing family members, and incarceration. I recently read a study that found that victims of bullying in childhood were over 4 times more likely to have anxiety in adulthood, and bullies were 4 times more likely to have antisocial personality mm-hmm. disorder as adults. Those are alarming statistics.
Yeah.
So this does carry over into adulthood, and adulthood goes on for a long time. So, you know, the longer it goes, the more challenging it is to kind of ameliorate, you know, these habits that we've formed. And the bottom line is we're still hurting.
That's
it. And there is hope. There is hope.
Oh, yeah.
There is a lot of help out there. And as we become more educated and more understanding of what's happening, you know, I would love for psychotherapy to be destigmatized. You know, some people...
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Some people...
Yeah.
Tell everyone, mm-hmm. I have a great therapist, and whereas other people want to walk out the side door and hide and mm-hmm. not let anybody know that they're coming to see me. What I say to everybody who comes to my door is therapy is about understanding yourself.
Exactly.
And once we can understand ourselves, then we can make any kind of possible changes you want to make for yourself. But it's really about understanding yourself. Not that you're so messed up and everyone thinks you're so mm-hmm. bad and all these problems. Understanding me, and then I can move forward and tackle what I want to change so I can live a happy and healthy and productive life.
In the last few minutes, let's look at the victim. And the victims, one question that is often posed is, why don't the victims stand up for themselves? Why don't they confront their bullies?
And it is mostly fear-based.
Mm-hmm.
They are afraid that they're going to get hurt. They are afraid that it's going to get worse. The reality is that when you don't stand up for yourself, it does get worse, and it persists and continues. So there is a real threat of retaliation for standing up for yourself. Oftentimes, the victim feels like they are all alone. You know, there's the bully. There's the mm-hmm. bystanders that are watching who aren't doing anything because they're also fearful that something is going to happen to them or they're going to be targeted now and it'll be the victim and they're going to be the new victim as well. So there are many reasons why this happens, but again, the victim feels that they're by themselves.
And I wanted to just emphasize the statements you made about the bystanders, because that's a common. Well, why people stand by? Kids stand by. They see this happening. They know it's happening. Why don't they do something?
They do, yeah. And it's part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of bystanders, and they may also feel guilty about it. They are afraid that they're going to become the next new victim. And it happens a lot.
It's not very easy to stand up. You know, for someone else. It's very difficult.
When you're young and you're growing and you're changing and you're trying to make friends and mm-hmm. you know, navigate all your peer relations, it's so difficult to stand up and to take a stand, you know? I mean, think about it, even as adults, sometimes it's difficult to do that. Imagine how more complex it is as a youngster and not even having, you know, the whereabouts to understand the whys or the implications and to process it like we do as adults. It is. It's very, very challenging. These bystanders and victims need to know that they're part of a village, they're part of a team. They could go and talk to their teacher about it. They can speak to their parents about it. And that they're not all alone.
Mm-hmm.
And little by little, with that happening, we can really change things. You know, one of the things I created in my office office is a secret box. You know, if you go on my website, you could see what this is.
Share your website with us.
Oh, yes.
We've Dr. done all this talk.
com. So DrJoeTaraVella.com. And on there, you'll see some information about bullying and families in crisis, but also the secret box. And it is a therapeutic tool that I use in my office. Everyone has secrets, and secrets are divisive. And people have a hard time sharing their secrets. And I use that box to give people a safe place to share their secrets. And they can write them down and put it in the box, and they're in control of it. We don't even have to read it. But the act of actually letting that secret out and into the box is in and of itself a release of that and all the toxic energy that goes with it. And I let that patient be in control as to when we're reading it, who's reading it. Do you want me to read it while you're here? Do you want me to read it when you're not here? Do you want to read it to me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it bridges that gap and really helps people reveal a lot of uncomfortable thoughts and secrets that they're holding on to, whether it's individuals that have been raped, someone's marriage is breaking up and they had been cheating on a spouse. And it facilitates a conversation and releases all of that negative energy and toxic feelings that they have.
So you know,
I'd love to get secret box in schools where children can anonymously report what they see, you know, and someone in the administration is in charge of investigating what's happening here. You know, if kids are called into the office and are spoken to with the administrative team, it shows that there's a level of awareness.
Awareness and support.
And support that something's going on here. And if you need something from us, we're here to help you. But we want to make sure this is a safe environment where everyone gets to learn and has a good time. And it shows them, you know, you're on our radar.
Well, on that note, I will close. You know, your information has been just invaluable. I really appreciate you taking the time to share and talk with 411 Teen. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical engineer, Evan Rossi. Audio copies are available, and if you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have topic suggestions, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. That's 1-800-829-8809. Extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen Podcast, log in wfsu.org.